The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3. The Bigger Picture with Ryan Hwang.
Good morning. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. The US-China trade talks kick off tomorrow in Washington, but we already have a couple of obstacles in the way. Overnight, tensions were raised further with the US slapping visa bans on Chinese officials linked to the mass detention of Muslims in Xinjiang province. So where does this leave trade talks and how will markets be pricing this all in? Let's get a bigger picture from Manpreet Gill. He is the head of FICC investment strategy at Standard Chartered Private Bank. Morning, Manpreet. How are you doing?
Hi, morning, Ryan. Well, could be better.
Manpreet, it's been quite a busy week in terms of headlines. Yesterday, we had the US blacklisting 8 big technology Chinese companies linked to the human rights abuse. That was actually new territory in the US-China trade dispute. Now, they have gone in deeper with the visa bans on Chinese officials. And we are also hearing pretty strong language now. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is calling that mass detention in Xinjiang province the stain of the century. So all this leading to the trade talks, Manpreet, how much lower are expectations of something being achieved now?
Well, I suppose expectations are the silver lining here. I mean, you know, in the past, one of the errors almost markets made was sort of, you know, getting the hopes too high going into trade talks because, look, we've always held the view that some sort of truce or interim deal is possible, but there are a lot of contentious issues at play here between the U.S. and China. So it's not going to be easy to get to some sort of big bang deal. I think some of the measures, of course, announced yesterday do mark an escalation, but I suppose the fact is the two sides are still talking. And I think the upside for investors is that at least market expectations are clearly lower going to these sort of trade talks than they have in previous rounds. So to us, that's obviously a bit more realistic, but I think it does sort of temper the risk of volatility somewhat as long as we don't get a complete collapse.
So Manpreet, looking at the economic data I've been getting around the US and Chinese economy, is there urgency for them to iron things out? Just yesterday, we had the services PMI for China came in at the weakest pace in 7 months with a reading of 51.3. That's down from 52.1 the previous month. What do you make of the, you know, the numbers and what that will be being carried in terms of significance into the trade talks?
Well, I think the data, you know, does sort of create an incentive for both sides to put some effort into these talks and again work towards some sort of truce at a minimum. I think you rightly pointed out that China data, of course, has been soft. There has been obviously some moderate support from the government, but you know there has been an effort not to sort of end up generating excessive debt out of the effort. So whatever stimulus measures we've seen, you know, we'd expect them to continue to be relatively modest and targeted. But I think the big one is in the U.S. because Trump, like any U.S. president, is likely to be aware that you know, should there be a recession before the presidential election, history would not be on his side in terms of, you know, his re-election chances. So I think the good news is, yes, we're seeing some, obviously, tensions being raised ahead of the talks, but clearly both sides do have an incentive to try and calm things down a little bit. So, look, to us, it's still not an easy situation to resolve. We wouldn't sort of get our expectations too high, but what it tells us is there are a few silver linings, and I think for investors, what that means is we need to continue to be prepared for more sort of volatility. We've seen this pattern, you know, going into and coming out of trade talks before many times this year, but I think what's important is not to keep our expectations too high and ultimately go back to focusing on the fundamental macro data, which arguably in the US, as long as we don't get a shock, a massive shock out of trade, is still, you know, showing signs of holding up.
Manpreet, what's your current base case now for the US-China trade talks? Do you see them being resolved before the elections?
I think our base case is that, you know, we do see the two sides achieve some sort of interim deal or some sort of truce, at least. I think getting some sort of comprehensive agreement does look difficult. We've always held that, you know, that does look unlikely over a short period of time, just given the range and the nature of the topics at hand. But from a financial market perspective, we think that will be enough to at least minimize some of the downside risks of volatility so that markets can continue to focus on what we think are still some late cycle growth ahead of us, especially if we do see industrial activity in the U.S. show some early signs of rebound. I think the next couple of months will be particularly important from that perspective. And you don't need a massive trade deal for that. You just need to avoid avoidance of a big downside shock.
We're chatting with Manpreet Gill. He is the head of FICC Investment Strategy at Standard Chartered Private Bank. Manpreet, closer to home, looking ahead on Monday, we have a policy decision by the MAS, the Central Bank of Singapore. They are expected, widely expected, to be more accommodative and maybe put a lid on the strength of the Singapore dollar. According to the latest report I'm reading today from DBS, they are expecting the Sing dollar to drop to 1.42 versus the greenback. We are now at 1.38. Manpreet, what's your reading of how low the Sing dollar might go?
Well, for us, I think, again, a move slightly above 140 towards 141, you know, this year does seem reasonable. I think the likelihood that the MAS will sort of, you know, ease policy through the currency is pretty much consensus. I think the question is how much. Do they end up meeting consensus or do they end up easing a little bit more than that? I think that's really the question for market. And look, I think just from a point of view of where sort of growth has been, you know, a little bit soft domestically recently, and the fact that we've seen you know, policymakers around the region ease, I think, you know, the consensus amount, you know, does look reasonable. A little bit further weakness in Sing dollar, you know, is what we think is a key implication. But also for the Sing dollar, the other big and very important factor is what the US dollar does. Because a move towards 141 or 142 would be consistent with the US dollar strength, at least over the next couple of months, continuing to hold. But the big question for us going to 2020 is whether the US dollar does indeed peak and start reversing. We don't think that's a story for the next sort of few weeks. But I think next year, that's a question we will be asking ourselves, because that could potentially turn the tables for the Sing dollar at some point.
So look out for further weakness in the Sing dollar. Manpreet, just to wrap things up, a very common question we're getting nowadays or hearing from investors is, how do they generate sustainable income in today's low yield environment? Where should they turn to when you try to get the best risk to reward ratio right now? We are looking at bond yields pretty much close to zero or very low at least right now.
Well, for us, the most effective way to generate yield today is about following a very diversified approach across all income assets. You know, we have a tendency to think of income is most commonly generated through, you know, bonds or some type sort of, you know, fixed yielding asset. But like you rightly pointed out, the yields on those are quite low, and there's a temptation to take, you know, an excessive amount of risk to generate the kind of yield that you know, one is often used to. But that may not always be the right kind of risk to take at this point in time. Instead, what we think is following a diversified, what we call a multi-asset income approach, that actually we think makes sense. It's a strategy that did very well the last time bond yields were zero or negative in major economies. And we think we're, you know, heading into very much of a similar environment. And I think what that means is not thinking just in terms of traditional bonds, but looking at bonds across the global spectrum. You have some risky ones, you have non-risky ones, you have equities, can also be a source of income.
So bond proxies and dividend stocks as well, Manpreet?
Absolutely. And what we'd call sort of non-traditional sources, things like, you know, classes like, you know, convertibles or REITs. I mean, all of them, when you put them together as a basket, it helps minimize some or at least reduce to some extent the volatility we spoke about, especially when you have events like trade. But it also means that you're not relying on just a handful of sources for the income. You're actually diversifying out that source of income and so raising the chances that it's more sustainable over time. And hopefully, you know, losses or weakness in one area would be offset by you know, some positive news elsewhere.
Okay, a diversified basket is the way to go. That was Manpreet Gill, head of FICC Investment Strategy at Standard Chartered Private Bank. Manpreet, thank you so much for your time this morning. Have a great day ahead.
Thanks, Ryan. Have a good day yourself.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.